This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. House Bill 2 remains in the news with impact looming because of a decision by the Fourth Circuit Court in a Virginia case involving a transgender high school student there. Governor McCrory meets the press on the issue, and now Donald Trump has chimed in with an opinion. Meanwhile, Attorney General Roy Cooper moves ahead of Pat McCrory in the race for governor, according to an Elon University poll. Some congressional districts were recently redrawn. We get an update on campaigning in those districts and an update on progress on the next city budget. CMPD complains they aren't getting the resources they need in a growing community. There appears to be a cancer cluster in northern Mecklenburg County, and the former principal convicted of embezzlement is sentenced. Those stories and other ones in our weekly local news roundup this hour. WFAE's Tom Bullock is here along with Glenn Birkins, editor and publisher of Q City Metro. Welcome.
Thank you.
You're new to our group.
Yes.
But I remember you from other incarnations. Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer from the Charlotte Business Journal, is here, and so is Eric Frazier, editorial writer for the Charlotte Observer. And I want to point out to the radio listeners who can't see this, they have changed chairs just to confuse me this morning.
Trying to make sure you're awake.
That's right. All right, let's start with the Elon University poll, which shows Attorney General Roy Cooper gaining the lead over Pat McCrory in the race for governor. Previous polls had the two neck and neck with a margin of error, but this new poll gives Cooper 48% to 42% lead. And I know a lot can change between now and November, but what do you think accounts for this move ahead?
Well, it seems like the lead pollster, the question he asked or he was asked is how much HB2 factored into this. And his answer was, we're not really sure, but it seems like that would have to be part of the answer to this.
Yeah. I mean, if you read through all the data that they've released, and it's a solid poll, we're not really sure. I mean, as you said, Mike, a ton can change. But the reason politicians pay attention to these early polls are really, there's two big points. The first, as you said, in the last three polls, they have been tied, virtually tied in the margin of error. We all know this is going to be one heck of a governor's race. Pat McCrory is considered one of the most, if not the most, vulnerable Republican governors in the country. Roy Cooper is a very legitimate Democratic challenger. To see this jump, though, to see this go from inside the margin of error to a 6-point lead, you have to begin to wonder how much of this is, in fact, House Bill 2, or just a general kind of gaining of momentum in Roy Cooper's camp, which is really what politicians are watching for right now.
I think House Bill 2, just my gut tells me some of this is House Bill 2, because whenever you have a chaotic environment in a state, and that's what we have right now, politically speaking, mm-hmm. This is, HB2 has just been like an atomic bomb that's gone off in the middle of North Carolina politics, to the extent that now it's radiating outward nationally and you're getting presidential candidates who are debating the same thing. Anytime you have that level of just sort of animosity, discord, chaos, that's going to reflect badly on the chief executive of the state.
Especially one,
rightly or wrongly. Yeah, that's just how people perceive it.
And especially one who literally signed the bill just hours after it was passed in special session. He was a big proponent from the gate.
Yeah. I think Eric is right. I don't think it's necessarily that the voters are opposed to HB2, though I think there are a number who are. I think there's just been a constant drumbeat of negative news about mm-hmm. the governor, and that has to play in.
Well, and I think the other thing is that this is the kind of issue that cuts through everything, whereas you had things like Tom Ross at the UNC system, or you had the prison contract with Graham Keith. Those are little ripples. Those are big in our world, but I think general public's just kind of like, whatever. But this one is so big and so overwhelming that you can't help but pay attention to it.
Then you've probably answered my next question, because the Elon poll also shows McCrory's job approval rating at 37% compared to 49% of the people who say they disapprove of the job he's doing, and that's his lowest approval rating since Elon first polled on that question 2 years ago. Meanwhile, this is interesting to me, 43% of registered voters say they approve of the job Roy Cooper is doing, while 27% disapprove. That was conducted on April 10th through 15th, and it seems to me that Roy Cooper, who has refused to enforce HB2, is getting a good job approval rating.
And I think,
what does that say?
I think what that says, that's probably the strongest tie that we have to House Bill 2 in particular. And here's why. That comes after Roy Cooper announced he would not defend the bill in court.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also arguably the big introduction of Roy Cooper to a broader electorate in North Carolina. Now, he is the attorney general. It is a statewide elected position. But have no doubts, when you're running for attorney general, you do not get the same level of attention as you do running for governor. And this seems
most people don't even know what Roy Cooper does.
I was going to say, aside from his declaration that he's not going to enforce it, I don't know if anyone...
I also find it interesting, if I'm hearing those numbers correctly, Mike, 43 approve, 27 disapprove on Cooper.
No, on the...
You know, Cooper, even with all of that, perhaps momentum for people, obviously, who oppose HB2, he's still not over 50%, which tells me that probably there are plenty of people who disagree and also plenty of people who just don't know what he does.
Well, there are, because if 43% of registered voters approve of the job he's doing, even though he said he's not going to defend the state against HB2 lawsuits, 49% of respondents said that the state should prohibit cities from passing ordinances like the Charlotte ordinance.
Well, but only in part. That only, Mike, forgive me for interrupting, but that is only in reference to the bathrooms. Because more than 50% disagree with House Bill 2 because it bans cities from passing their own minimum wages.
Right.
So there's this internal conflict on what House Bill 2 does and how it's perceived.
That poll, I think, really points to exactly where the legislature went wrong with this bill, which when you get right down to it, what it really was about was a political strategy. It was an election year political strategy to give to help McCrory firm up his bona fides with the conservative
base.
They
were throwing red meat at.
I don't know that I agree that it was done for McCrory. I think that McCrory was dragged into something
that he didn't really
want to be part of. Remember, he didn't want the special session. And then I think when he saw sort of the political tea leaves, he said, well, I got to sign this thing because if not, then the base is going to turn on me. And so now he's in this matrix, as Chuck Todd illustrated so wonderfully last week, where he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, that is true.
Absolutely.
That is true. I guess I should say the Republican Berger, probably Berger more than anybody, this is red meat to his base.
Absolutely.
And I would have to think, though, that from Berger's perspective, this was a political win. He just didn't see where this could be a loss, and they overshot the landing.
He still doesn't see where it could be a loss.
Yeah, and he's mistaken about that. But they went too far, and they went further than the voters only wanted the bathroom bill, and he went there and passed it.
Is it a mistake? I mean, if McCrory loses the election to Roy Cooper, then they have a Democrat to kick around in the Republican.
Right. They don't even have to wonder where he'll go. I think they have. It's a little bit of a mystery sometimes with McCrory. With Cooper, it's a clean transaction. They just know they'll run over whatever he does.
It also gets rid of what is seen as in-party bickering.
Mm-hmm.
Because Pat McCrory, as a Republican, when he clashes with the Republican General Assembly, that adds to the story. With Roy Cooper, it's as Eric said, I totally agree. Basically, it just means, hey, we can easily override his veto.
That's our speed bump.
I think it's a little cynical to suggest that it's all about throwing red meat to the base. I think that's an added plus. But if you look at the politicians we're talking about, they're conservative Republicans. Mm-hmm. They actually believe in what they've done.
There's a lot of ideology.
Absolutely, there is.
True. That's true.
In another interesting taking of the temperature of voters, this Elon poll reveals that if the presidential election were held, I guess, in April 10th through 15th, in North Carolina, Hillary Clinton would likely defeat Donald Trump, but would lose against Ted Cruz. Bernie Sanders would beat them both. She would beat Trump 45-39% and lose to Cruz by 3%. Bernie beats Trump 51-38% and Cruz 49-39%. How do you explain that?
I don't think
he just has. Yeah,
I think that's the most counterintuitive poll I've read.
I mean, is that
time.
Well? But you've seen national polls like that in the past year. I think what it says, whether Bernie would win or not, what it says is that Hillary is not a likable figure. There are plenty of people who support her, but for her to win, sort of the embrace of a voter. There's not as much passion around her as there is for Bernie Sanders.
But does this say that maybe we have an influx of people from outside the state who have moved here who have different values or different ideas or philosophies than the what we normally anticipate North Carolina voters to have?
Maybe. But I think this I agree with Glenn. This part of the poll completely confounds me for two reasons. You can argue overall that when you see similar poll numbers in other places, it's largely because they're including independents who don't often get to vote in party primaries because you have to be registered in a party. Like take New York, for instance, which just happened on Tuesday. You have to have been registered as a Democrat or a Republican in New York. I think it was in October in order to vote in this Tuesday's primary. But here in North Carolina, I'm an independent voter. I'm registered, unaffiliated, and I voted in the primary and I walked up and got to pick which party platform or which party slate that I got to pick from.
And which one did you pick?
Me in my ballot box. Thank you very much. So I don't know. This one's a head scratcher for me.
Yeah, I have to think that a lot of that is that Bernie Sanders just hasn't been there. That concentrated fire
right.
of negative
the scrutiny,
advertising.
Right.
They just haven't trained it on him yet. And when they do, his numbers will.
Well, here's the other thing, though. Let's be honest. It's highly, highly, highly unlikely that Bernie Sanders is going to be the nominee. Now Cruz and Trump is a lot more debatable, but Hillary seems to be, for all intents and purposes, the one who will be on the Democratic side in November. So that's what makes those numbers more interesting to me is that against Cruz, and by the way, I bet Governor McCrory is also paying close attention to that Republican nomination because if it's Cruz, he's probably in better shape than if it's Trump.
Hmm. Last weekend, Governor McCrory learned the true meaning of the phrase, if it's Sunday, it's meet the press. He met the press on Sunday. As you mentioned, Eric went to Chuck Todd and sat at the table.
Yes, so let's talk about Barry Goldwater.
The reviews are in, and how are they?
I think the reviews are what you would expect. For people who don't like HB2, they say that the governor was filleted by Chuck Todd. And for those who are in favor of HB2, they say that McCrory brought a good dose of common sense to the national debate on this issue. So
I actually think the opposite. I think that Todd actually went very easy on him.
Mm-hmm. Really?
When you make comments that business should decide what kind of society we're going to live in, I'm not the PR executive,
HR
executive, right? For these companies, we don't let companies decide who can visit which bathrooms in our society. And I think that was a major blunder on the governor's part.
And it reminds me of something I read where they were asking basically if we are really so concerned about predators sneaking into women's bathrooms, why would we allow companies the privilege to exercise this sort of leeway whereby you would be allowing predators into bathrooms?
Right. Those arguments, but for someone who's for HB2, they're going to say that what McCrory said is exactly where they fall on the bill.
And isn't that bedrock Republican philosophy?
Yes.
Well, for part of the Republican Party.
Right, for part of it, yes.
We have to take a break. We'll talk some more about Meet the Press and the governor and other things. And we'll hear from Dave, who emailed us already this morning. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and communities and schools whose mission is to surround students with a community of support, empowering them to stay in school and achieve in life. Details at cischarlotte.org. And TFM Carolina's Sovereign Oaks, opening its newest neighborhood on April 30th, offering community gardens, a greenhouse, and wooded walking trails for an active lifestyle. SovereignOaks.com. When a Mississippi toddler was sent away to an institution nearly 80 years ago, there was not a name for his odd behavior. The boy's mother thought he was insane. Well, a few years later, he would become the first ever diagnosed case of autism. Several decades would pass for public awareness to catch up, and even for the medical community to get a handle on it. ABC's John Donvan has written a book chronicling that journey, and he and his co-author share the story with us Monday at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. Presidential frontrunners win big in the New York primary. Michigan's Attorney General files criminal charges against officials in Flint. And Harriet Tubman will replace Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill.
That's the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show, ahead from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's our local weekly news roundup with Tom Bullock from WFAE News, Glenn Birkins, the editor and publisher of Q-City Metro, Eric Frazier, editorial writer for the Charlotte Observer, and Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer with the Charlotte Business Journal. As we said, Meet the Press last Sunday featured Governor Pat McCrory with Chuck Todd. Did he set the record straight? Did he say anything that was revelatory about either his thinking or the legislature's thinking before the bill passed, and now that they've seen some of the fallout from the bill?
Well, you haven't seen the fallout. They didn't know the fallout that was coming this week. There was no Fourth Circuit Court of Appeal decision yet.
Right.
I don't think he said anything revelatory. In fact, if anything, I'm going to actually vote. We've got one vote that says it was a good interview and two votes that say that it wasn't, that Chuck Todd didn't.
I got you. Yes.
I'm going to add my vote to the Chuck Todd did not do a good job on that interview. The governor said some things that are just patently false. He said that the Charlotte ordinance would, in fact, have forced every employer to have, bathroom rules that would correspond to the city's ordinance. That's not true. It was public accommodation. So if you're a factory, if you're a data center, if you're an office building that is not open to the public, just like you don't have to have public restrooms in all buildings, this rule would not have applied to all restrooms. It would have applied to a large subset of businesses, but a subset nonetheless. He wasn't challenged on that point. There were lots of things that I found it to be a bit soft.
I found it rich that he would suggest that there needs to be dialogue, but yet this thing was crammed through and he signed
that's
it
a great
so,
point.
So quickly.
Yeah, that's right. A really good point.
And I wanted Todd to challenge him on that.
Well, I thought that one of the best questions that was asked was it's a simple question, but whether he had talked to anyone before this passed. And you saw McCrory had sort of a deer in the headlights. It was like, well, I've talked to a lot of transgender people beforehand and since, but not really directly before we considered this legislation. That was one. And the second one where I think he definitely was knocked off balance was the question when McCrory again said that HB2 was a matter of that the ordinance was a matter of overreach, and then the response from Todd was, what about HB2? Isn't that overreach? And he just kind of wandered off into the woods.
And it's a fascinating point that you bring up, because here it is. When supporters of House Bill 2 talk about the bill, they talk about it as being this tiny little thing. But really, it does a huge amount. I'm still, to this day, as much as we've talked about it, I'm still amazed at how much is inside that 5-page bill. Mm-hmm. And when they talk about the Charlotte ordinance, they talk about it being this huge, massive overreach that really was about one thing, which was access to – well, it was about a couple of things. But it's just fascinating to me that both sides always talk about the other side as being this massive overreach, even though both sides are kind of doing the same thing.
And I think supporters have done a wonderful job of painting this as a bathroom bill. Mm-hmm. And it's just so much more than a simple bathroom bill.
So we've asked people who are listening if they want to send us their questions or comments as we go through the program. They can do so on Facebook or Twitter or email. And on Twitter, you can use the hashtag WFAE Roundup. Dave emails, how do you think Governor McCrory's stand in the bathroom door, that's in quotes, compares to Governor Wallace's stand in the schoolhouse door?
Well, Eric, I know your answer.
The editorial board, at the Observer, we've made our position clear on that. We do see a parallel. You've got a sitting governor basically blocking. It's not a totally neat, clean parallel, but it's a very real parallel. You've got a sitting governor blocking a minority of the population from having access to the same rights that everyone else has, and doing so under the argument that he's not making this argument, but the bedrock supporters of it are, under the guise of the feeling that these particular minorities should not get what they want at the expense of or making uncomfortable the majority of citizens.
Well, and that was clearly the line that Chuck Todd was drawing when he read the quote from Barry Goldwater in 1964. I mean, that was pretty self-evident, right?
Yeah. Except then he didn't follow up on it.
Well,
the rich irony is that we probably wouldn't be here had we not had those opponents to civil rights. If Wallace had not stood in the schoolhouse door and that kind of thing, because now we're seeing other people using those same civil rights strategies to demand mm-hmm. their rights. So there's a rich irony there.
Mm-hmm. Has all of this or part of it, how much of this, I guess is the question, has been neutered by the decision later in the week after Meet the Press by the Fourth Circuit Court to decide in favor of a transgender boy in Virginia, allowing him to use the bathroom of his gender identity in his own school?
As Phil Berger said, that, you know, and I always look at Phil Berger. I actually think Phil Berger should have been the one sitting there at Meet the Press with Chuck Todd rather than McCrory. Yeah. And what Phil Berger said in regards to that lawsuit is, well, we don't even know how that's going to come out, which technically is correct because they remanded it back to the original, you know, trial court for further, you know, sort of analysis and that type of thing. But it does throw a giant cloud over HB2. I mean, it's basically cutting the legs out from under the whole rationale for HB2.
It also sets legal precedent. I mean, they didn't just remand it back to the lower court to say, hey, why don't you take a look at this? They remanded it back to the lower court saying, we believe, meaning the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals believes, that the interpretation, and it is an interpretation, of Title IX by the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights stands as precedent, and we think that's the right thing. So is it a full-out, set-in-stone decision? No.
But that precedent is key. They made it clear where they were headed, though.
You know, Bruce Springsteen can cancel his concert, and PayPal can decide not to bring 400 jobs to North Carolina. But you lose Title IX money. That's where the rubber meets the road,
right? Well, and that's been a big arguing point from the beginning on HB2 is, what is it, $4.5 billion. Mm-hmm. Now, again, with both sides, you know, for people who oppose HB2, they talk about it as though $4.5 billion is instantly going to be yanked out of the state. That's not how it's going to work. Mm-hmm. We don't know how much and when and all those things. But certainly that is the overarching threat, and that's what gets this conversation into overdrive.
And the NBA, who met last week and decided not to take action on the All-Star game, has now thrown the gauntlet down on the floor and said, you know, the law has to change or we're not coming.
I think people misinterpreted the first iteration of what the NBA commissioner said. What he said was, we're not going to threaten and we're not going to give ultimatums, but we're not happy with this law.
But didn't he just say that this week? That essentially, if they don't change the law, we're not coming.
Well, yeah, I guess
he didn't say it outright, but the implication.
Yeah, the implication is that I think the implication has been clear consistently all the way through. What they're trying not to do is to say, if you don't do this by May 15th, we're out of here. And I think the other thing, and you heard the commissioner say this, what's complicating is, of course, we're going to have home playoff games this weekend in Charlotte, and it would be quite difficult to remove the All-Star game as your hosting playoff game. Yeah. So
well, maybe that's why they're waiting.
From the looks of things,
they won't have to wait long.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. I think the Hornets might have misinterpreted the message and thought they had to leave the playoffs immediately.
So to be clear, what you're saying is the Miami Heat is placing Heat on the NBA over the Heat for House Bill 2?
I think maybe so, unfortunately. Going back to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, they've remanded, as you say, back to the lower courts. But if they make this decision, what's the process going forward? You can't appeal, can you, in your own – we're part of the Fourth Circuit Court. So you can't appeal that decision in the Fourth Circuit. It would take another state to go to their own circuit, wouldn't it?
Well, there's two parts here. I'm sorry, Eric. Go ahead.
I was going to say, if I'm understanding your question correctly, I think the appeal from the Fourth Circuit would only be to the Supreme Court.
Correct. But to get it there, you'd have to go through – another state would have to go through their own circuit.
Not necessarily.
So there would be two different decisions.
This same decision could come back to the Fourth Circuit in theory, could come back to the Fourth Circuit and could be appealed back up to the Supreme Court.
That's what I'm asking. I'm asking is, what is the path to the Supreme Court from there?
It's –
Go ahead.
So there are a couple different ways. This ruling could easily be up. You know, there could be an appeal directly to the U.S. Supreme Court, but the U.S. Supreme Court, more often than not, waits to see until there's a conflict of interpretation between circuits. I think a really good parallel here is same-sex marriage. So the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that same-sex marriage was legal. It took, you know, the Supreme Court, they didn't really do much on that decision until the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is kind of Midwest, mm-hmm. ruled that state constitutional amendments banning same-sex marriage was legal. Then you had a conflict. That's when the Obergefell case moved to the U.S. Supreme Court, and we finally got a clear decision across the
nation. And do you remember what the time frame was for that? Because I'm trying to think, at least months, right?
It was a while, yeah.
Right. So that's what I wonder about is, okay, even if – well, first of all, I don't think Phil Berger and the legislature are going to say – clearly they're not going to say the Fourth Circuit said this. We better repeal. So this is going to be more likely than not a long process that probably goes into the 2017 session at least. Mm. So, I mean – There you go. So there's not going to be a tidy answer, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
They're going back into session for the short session on Monday.
Right, 8 weeks.
They're not going to take this up at all.
Yeah.
Berger
made it pretty clear that he has no intention of going back there.
The Republicans I've talked to have said they don't see a need to tweak anything. They think that they
because most of the pain has happened in Charlotte.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's an interesting point. Tom, you had that cut a couple of weeks ago. I think it was Skip Stam saying, well, you know, mm-hmm. Charlotte may be hurt, but nobody else. Of course, I guess he wasn't counting Deutsche Bank and Cary as part of.
In fairness, I talked to him before that decision.
But clearly, that's the way it was going, is mm-hmm. my point. And so, when do legislators say, look, the pain is not just Charlotte, we've got to do something? Doesn't look like that's happening anytime soon.
I think it would take, you know, the holy grail of economic development in North Carolina has been trying to get one of these giant car manufacturers, ideally to go somewhere down east. I think it would take one of those manufacturers saying, we were thinking about you guys in Rockingham or, you know, wherever, but now we're not coming. You would see an immediate one, you know, these guys would spin on their heels and back up in a hurry.
The fact that we were 0 for life before HB2.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Chris has emailed us an interesting comment. He says, I find it a little hypocritical that Bruce Springsteen and PayPal are applauded for refusing to serve or take part in a state where they disagree with the values, but a baker or a florist is demonized for exercising their right to choose who they serve.
You know, I will add to that comment. I actually saw a tweet that was a really interesting one. Michael Moore, the filmmaker, the documentarian, who's very left, said he's not going to show any films in North Carolina in opposition to this bill. And someone tweeted back at him and said, boy, isn't it great to be able to have a choice of who you serve or where your product goes? That gets to yet another aspect of this bill, which is in other states known as a Religious Freedom Restoration Act. This bill, in yet another twist, has what could be seen as kind of a backdoor version of that, mm-hmm. which is, allowing basically protecting your religious right and in business. It's worded a little bit vaguely, but it is there. And it's, you know, honestly, it's a point that is brought up by those who are opposed to House Bill 2. That is, in fact, a fair point. You can talk about the larger issue, but, you know, it is nice for people to be able to decide.
Meanwhile, all of this has moved, I think, as Eric Fraser pointed out, into the presidential race. Donald Trump was on the Today Show yesterday and weighed in with his opinion on HB2. And what he had to say may surprise some people who have not kept up with all of this.
North Carolina did something that was very strong, and they're paying a big price, and there's a lot of problems. And I heard one of the best answers I heard was from a commentator yesterday saying, leave it the way it is right now. There have been not very few problems. Leave it the way it is. North Carolina, what they're going through with all of the business that's leaving and all of the strife, and that's on both sides. You leave it the way it is. There have been very few complaints the way it is. People go, they use the bathroom that they feel is appropriate. There has been so little trouble. And the problem with what happened in North Carolina is the strife and the economic punishment that they're taking. So I would say that's probably the best.
Do you have any transgender people working in your organization?
I don't know.
No?
I really don't know. I probably do. I really don't know.
So if Caitlyn Jenner were to walk into Trump Tower,
and want to use the bathroom, you would be fine with her using any bathroom she chooses.
That is correct.
So let's go through that. He mentioned that all of the business that's leaving North Carolina and the economic distress being caused by this bill, aside from PayPal and Deutsche Bank, are we having economic distress?
Yeah, I think economic distress would be a bit of an exaggeration. I also think that his answer is interesting. On the one hand, he's saying North Carolina shouldn't have gotten into this because it just causes too big of a headache and you have economic losses. At the same time, what he's also saying is, if you're gay and transgender, why not just sort of stay over in your corner and not raise a big fuss, and we could have all just gotten along? So I don't think that advocates of the ordinance are going to be happy with that kind of answer. You were fine as long as you were sort of hidden from the world in terms of what you were doing.
In fairness to Donald Trump, I mean, he was asked this question, and he's right. A presidential candidate. I don't know when the last time he's been to North Carolina is.
Sure.
But he does sound like he doesn't have a complete grasp of what's going on with this.
Yeah, I was a little unclear what exactly he was meaning when he said it should be left. Yeah. It was fine the way it was, or which part
was ambiguous.
Fine.
See, I was interpreting that as before they started with HB2 or ordinances, that the world just kind of ran the way it ran and people weren't really talking about this. So why sort of let it all up?
Despite the ambiguity, I think what was clear is that Donald Trump is probably to the left of most Republicans.
And that was going to be my next question. Does that send another shiver of alarm down the spines of the head of the RNC, Reince Priebus, or others who are in charge of the GOP?
I think it probably isolates some of the Christian conservatives, but he's gone through the whole campaign anyway.
Yeah. He's gone through the whole campaign. I mean, we've had abortion issue. We've had plenty of issues where Donald Trump has not conformed to the sort of conservative orthodoxy.
I've got to ask this, though. I don't know if this is going to make any dent in his support from evangelicals at all. I mean, again, let's not forget, this is a thrice-divorced casino magnate that is winning the evangelical
vote. That's what I'm saying. I mean,
Madison Avenue and not lose votes.
He was already a known entity for not being sort of hewing to the Republican orthodoxy.
Now, I know they're running a presidential campaign, but this is what Ted Cruz had to say yesterday. And I wish I had the cut, but I don't, so let me give you the verbatim. Donald agreed with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama in attacking the state of North Carolina for passing their bathroom ordinance, and Donald on television this morning said, gosh, he thought men should be able to go into the girls' bathroom if they want to. Now let me ask you, have we gone stark raving nuts? That's Ted Cruz.
That wasn't over the top at all. I thought that was very subtle.
but I mean, that is what his voter base is asking and is saying. I mean, and he is accurately reflecting what they're asking.
But one last point I want to bring out is at this point for Ted Cruz, Donald Trump could say the sky is blue, and Ted Cruz would come out and say, is it really blue, or is he just agreeing with the political correctness mob? He's looking to get delegates and votes any way he can. So when he can draw a line, he's going to draw it.
And we have to take a break. We'll come back and talk about other things, believe it or not. There are other things going on.
What?
Hey, who knew? Who knew? You'll find out on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Atrium Animal Hospital and Wellness Center, providing holistic animal health care for 20 years, offering pet parents a strategy to achieve and maintain furry family vitality. AtriumAnimalHospital.com. And the 2016 Wells Fargo Championship, held May 2nd through the 8th at Charlotte's Quail Hollow Club. Tickets available at WellsFargoChampionship.com. Presidential frontrunners win big in the New York primary. Michigan's attorney general files criminal charges against officials in Flint, Michigan. And Harriet Tubman will replace Andrew Jackson on the front of the $20 bill. Those stories and more with a panel of journalists in the National News Roundup Hour with Diane Rehm coming up in 20 minutes. The International Hour follows at 11. And if you'd like to join in on our conversation, you're welcome to at charlottetalks at WFAE.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or get through us by using Twitter at Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Presidential elections are historic, and All Things Considered has brought you four decades of election coverage.
Regardless of how you vote, I urge each of you to vote.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
We're going to choose the last president of the 20th century and the first president of the 21st
century. I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
Once again, this election year, we bring you the political news of the day with perspective. Listen every afternoon.
Weekdays from 4 to 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's the weekly news roundup on Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer from the Charlotte Business Journal, Eric Frazier, editorial writer with the Charlotte Observer, Glenn Birkins, editor and publisher of Q-City Metro, and Tom Bullock, reporter for WFAE News. We're going to move on from HB2, but there are a couple little sidebar issues that we don't want to spend a lot of time on. But conservative groups are asking legislators to sign a pledge not to repeal any parts of this law. Who are the groups? Has the legislature complied yet?
Here, I brought a copy of it for you, actually. You can see it right there. This is a coalition of people who were big supporters of the bill. But what actually happened is they sent this to members of the General Assembly. And then I think within 12 hours or so, once news started getting out that this pledge had been sent, they sent another email saying, please disregard that pledge. We didn't quite mean to send it out. Sorry, our bad.
Are they affiliated in any way with the North Carolina Values Coalition?
That's one of the members, yep.
Okay, because they have asked for city records, Charlotte city records, and emails over this issue. What's to be gained by that?
Who knows?
It's a fishing trip, just to see what'll turn up. I mean, the HRC, the Human Rights Coalition campaign, has done the same thing with the state. You know, it's just
both sides due
diligence.
Yes. Okay. That's OPPO research.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
A married Charlotte lesbian couple has joined a suit against HB2 because they were turned away by a fertility clinic. They say that HB2 has encouraged this type of conduct and that they no longer have the ability to file discrimination complaints, which is true in North Carolina because of HB2.
Well, in state court.
In state court, yes. So even if HB2 hadn't removed a person's right to file a suit in state court, the law does allow refusal of service. So would they have a case, I guess.
Well, not in state court.
Not in state court, yeah.
But yes, I mean, this goes back to actually the earlier comment that you read about, you know, how nice it is to be able to say no. This is the backdoor Religious Freedom Restoration Act in action. And under HB2, businesses have that right. And you know, this turns into a federal case. This now, you know, they joined the federal lawsuit because this would have to go to a federal court. And it's an interesting thing that it's now expanding to include other aspects of this, of House Bill 2, particularly when it comes to, I'm guessing, you know, equal protection under the law clause.
And I've seen the point made along the lines of the religious freedom bills that this HB2 actually goes even broader than the average religious freedom bill, because the folks refusing the service don't have to specifically say I'm doing this in because of my, you know, to protect my religious belief because I disagree. They don't even have to make declaration.
Which is
turn it down.
Which is interesting because, you know, in talking about the fact that this isn't a religious freedom bill, there's also been a lot of criticism that in the minds of critics, that makes the North Carolina bill even more hateful or divisive because it's not even on the basis of your religious faith. It just is.
Meanwhile, the Charlotte Business Journal wrote a story about why the Charlotte Chamber is not joining their counterparts in Raleigh or Durham calling for an HB2 repeal. What's the story?
Pretzel logic. You know, I think I've talked about this a couple of times. The Charlotte Chamber is struggling mightily to figure out how to navigate this issue because there are plenty of other business issues where they want to stay in the, I don't know, good but decent graces of the Republican-led legislature and Governor Pat McCrory. And so their argument is that calling for a repeal will only offend them or turn them off from even talking about improving HB2.
The Observer reported this morning that the State Chamber of Commerce is looking into this.
Well, we basically were taking the State Chamber to task, the editorial board, was taking the State Chamber to task for having said even less than the Charlotte Chamber, because the State Chamber has just said, like you say, we're looking into this. And that was like 3 weeks ago when they first said, we're looking into this. And apparently it's taking a really long time when it seems pretty clear they need to either just be – you know, for it or against it, or maybe take some, you know, sort of nuanced position like the Charlotte Chamber, but they're just silent, which is really irresponsible.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that really stood out to me is as I was looking at Raleigh and Durham, their chambers of commerce, the Durham Chamber took a survey of members and reported that 80% of them did not like HB2, didn't think it should be passed. And then the other thing that the Durham Chamber is doing is they're going out and essentially holding educational workshops to explain to people why they think this is damaging to not only residents but to businesses. Can you imagine if the Charlotte Chamber were to take on a similar type role? That would be interesting.
There've been all kinds of stories about groups maybe not coming here, and some groups definitely not coming here because of this law. And there was a big story several weeks ago about what might happen at the annual Furniture Mart, which I think has already taken place. What did happen? Did people not come?
I'm not sure.
I believe they estimated that attendance could be cut by as much as 20%.
Was it?
I don't know. I haven't seen any numbers yet released in terms of attendance, but also more importantly in terms of purchase. But that isn't necessarily all that much of a surprise. I think sometimes, you know, it just wrapped up, I believe, this week. So it takes them a little while to kind of calculate all that.
We'll end this by with an email from Mark, who says, what we are all missing in the HB2 debate is that transgender people have been using the bathrooms they are comfortable with for years. The legislature passed a solution in search of a problem. Moving on. Congressional redistricting recently took place and completely changed some districts, including that of Alma Adams, whose district completely morphed. She didn't even live in the district. Now she's moving to Charlotte, although she did not have to. Her campaign coffers, though, appear to be still way ahead of her competitors in a district where they don't know her anymore.
Well, that's the power of the incumbency. Yeah. She is a sitting U.S. representative. That money has been coming in, you know, over the last 2 years. So it's not really a surprise at all that she is
dominating. Well, she has Emily's List, which is a very influential group.
Yeah, this will be an interesting sort of test case for the power of incumbency versus, you know,
name recognition,
grassroots, where you could argue that Malcolm Graham, Tricia Cotham have, you know, they've got like a generation's worth of head start in terms of just roots in the local community. But she's got all the money. So
that's true. They definitely have more local name recognition, but she's done an incredible job of getting out there. Hardly a week passes when she's not doing something in Charlotte to connect with those voters.
And she's got the hat thing going on.
Yeah.
She's been pretty cool.
Very aggressive and high-profile moments, such as when Hillary Clinton was here I guess was that in March? I can't remember when Hillary Clinton was here and Alma was there with her. So,
Right. Yeah,
she has been very aggressive. And I noticed this week Malcolm Graham, I think, had the sort of letter of what home really is. So he's clearly playing that side of it. It's going to be a very interesting race, I think.
I think the problem for her challengers is that politically and philosophically, there's not a lot of difference. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing that they can use to differentiate themselves. And that's going to be a problem when you're trying to go up against her.
So it was reported this week that CMPD will likely get 75 fewer new police officers than Chief Putney requested. In January, he asked for 125 additional officers and 80 support personnel, pointing out that crime has increased in Charlotte because Charlotte continues to grow and he needs these additions to the force. Why is his request likely to be denied?
Money.
Yeah,
the city's budget. I mean, you know, his original request would have cost $17.5 million. The lesser request that you're talking about, $4.4 million. And the city with that would still be facing more than a $3.5 million shortfall. So,
and remember, they've raised property taxes two of the last 3 years.
And they don't want to do it again. That's a great point.
Well, one council member pointed out that CMPD could not have hired that many officers in 1 year because they can't train that many officers.
I was going to say, I have to believe that if he's smart, Putney, and he is a smart man, that he probably padded the numbers knowing that he wasn't going to get what he asked for.
Well, that was going to be my question. Is this the annual dance of negotiation?
In part.
Okay. We talked about this a lot in the boom years before the recession. I remember having Harry Jones, the county manager, on many, many times, and we talked about the rampant growth that we were experiencing and how we just don't have the money for it. So I asked him, everybody in power and all developers say, growth is good. You don't grow, you die. So if growth is good and we're adding to the tax base through newcomers coming in, why isn't that paying for itself?
Well, because, I mean, what you're really talking about is the overall net effect. Well, with boom and growth come roads and sewer lines and garbage pickup
schools.
Yes, there's all kinds of costs.
But you're increasing the tax base. More people are here paying more taxes.
Why isn't that paying for itself? All at once. But when you plunk down money for a school or a road, right. You have to pay it right then. So in the long term, the city's going to grow and the coffers will grow, but the costs are up front.
So if we're unlikely to raise property taxes again, and there are other needs in the city other than just CMPD's request for more officers, are we likely to see less services?
Well, I don't think so.
Because we're talking about trash collection too, you know.
I think that was probably one of the places where they had to, maybe cut a corner that maybe, people could feel some pain. People in this case being, apartment dwellers?
Apartments and condos.
Right. And that was just, that was a money thing. They had to find some money somewhere, and that was where they
went. Well, and I think one trend we've seen clearly in Charlotte is that whether property taxes go up or not in a given year, service fees quite often are going up to make up that difference. So
it's a tax by another name.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like when we talk about the difference between tourism taxes for arenas. Well, that could only be used for tourism. Well, okay, but it's still tax money. So, one way or another, I think the services are staying fairly steady. I don't see, this huge reduction.
Yeah. But there's one wrinkle potentially out there that we could start seeing as early as Monday, and that is the General Assembly is in session. Let's not forget that, last year.
Who knows what they'll do.
Last year there was the whole sales tax thing again. Are we going to start doing this? There's all kinds of things that can happen. So, budget years are really fun to watch because at the very last – it's like a great basketball game. The very last second, something happens and the game is up for grabs yet again. You got to scramble at the last minute to win.
Are you remembering the NCAA – tournament? Is that what you're doing there?
Yes, look at that. That was a callback, right?
Sorry, flashback.
So CMS. CMS.
Well done.
CMS has hired a Charlotte company to do environmental tests around Hopewell High School in Huntersville because there have been a large number of cases of eye cancer in that area in recent years. It's an extremely rare form of cancer. Ocular melanoma, it affects 1 out of 5 million people, mostly older adults. But that area has identified a dozen cases in a town of 50,000 people, including recent high school graduates. The testing obviously is something we should do. Why is CMS doing it?
I have no idea. I mean, I'm guessing because it was at Hopewell High.
Don't schools do eye tests?
Well, this would be different. This
isn't
checking your environmental.
Specifically for the environment. That's a good question. Yeah, I guess just because it's school property?
Yeah, the more interesting thing to me is cancer clusters are very frightening. And David Borax, our colleague, did a great story about this. They're very frightening, but causes aren't always traceable to environmental factors. Sometimes they are. Sometimes they're not. Yeah. And it's one of the great curiosities of cancer is why do you get clusters? Again, sometimes it is stuff that's found in the soil, like they're testing. Sometimes it could be, there's all kinds of different things out there. But sometimes they seem to just happen for inexplainable reasons. So I think whoever's doing the testing, it's good that they're testing it. They should be. There should be a search into why there is this cluster there. But I think it's responsible for us to say that those tests may or may not show us why.
So David Borax on WFAE will keep us posted on what they discover as we go through. And I'm sure the Observer will get involved in this as well. We had an email comment earlier about when we were talking about HB2. I don't know how much about Roy Cooper, he says, but I do know that reelecting McCrory guarantees that garbage toll lane project will continue. Now, Representative Charles Jeter has drafted a bill to be filed Monday to cancel the I-77 toll project. Is it dead on arrival?
According to Mr. Berger in the Senate, pretty much.
It's interesting. I spoke with State Senator Jeff Tarte yesterday, and I asked him that very question. I said, so, you know, is there anything left to do? Is Jeter's bill dead? And he said, well, no, that's not what Berger was saying. What Berger was saying is he doesn't have any information now to change it. But once we can make the case, then I think he's willing to listen. And I would say that's a very optimistic view.
Yeah.
And,
really.
And it comes with a danger attached to it, because the legislature could say, okay, we'll cancel it. Now you pay the cancellation fee, which could be between $80 and $300 million.
I do think that Charlie Jeter's argument this past week, I think it was in your story, Tom, was very interesting about the fact that if you do the math on the 40% that was sold of this toll project, that leaves $63 million, and that's a lot less than what the state is saying. So in essence, Charlie Jeter's saying, hey, worst case, you pay $63 million and you're out of what is considered a terrible deal by people in North Mecklenburg.
If he's accurate on that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, the numbers do add up pretty well.
Well, yeah, and in fairness, this seems to be the David Borak section of our program that was done by my colleague as well. It is an interesting argument, but arguments alone aren't – legislation is about far more than arguments. And in this state at this time, in this city and in with the General Assembly, it's as much about sentiment and potential payback as it is, I would argue, about logic. So I don't know if his bill is dead on arrival, but given the tenor between Charlotte and Raleigh, I'd say there's a pretty decent chance that it's going to get a cold shoulder, if not a warm hug.
Well, we're going to leave you today, gentlemen, Glenn Birkins, Eric Frazier, Eric Spanberg, Tom Bullock, with a little music from Prince, who died yesterday at 57.
What
I'm sure they'll be talking about this next on the Diane Rehm version of the Weekly News Roundup. But thank you for joining us.